Welcome to the Concordia Publishing House podcast, where we consider everything in the light of Jesus Christ, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I'm your host, Elizabeth Pittman. Welcome, everyone. I'm glad that you've joined us today for today's conversation about mental health first aid. I'm joined by Heidi Gaiman and Rachel Taube for this important discussion. Heidi is a licensed social worker and a deaconess in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and Rachel is a program director for mental health first aid in the state of Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
I love doing this with multiple people because no one knows who's going to talk first. So I was like, really? So how are you?
Good. I'll go first. I am loving life because spring is upon us. And I like to call it the winter of desolation after we all walked through COVID-19 winter and kind of the heat of November and December of having maybe greater quarantines in our area than we had been doing and a little disconnection. And so I feel like we're walking into the 1 year anniversary with both that grief on our shoulders, but the light of the sun coming down and some new connections in our lives. So I'm really feeling like this is a good time to be a part of humanity, if you will, the shared experiences.
Excellent. How are you doing, Rachel?
I love it. I couldn't say it any better. I feel like the sunshine and the beautiful weather that we've been having lately just are making me really hopeful. So
I have to agree with that. Time. It's always fun when you look outside and all of a sudden you realize the spring plants are coming up. Like the tulip bulbs are starting to pop and the hyacinths. Like, oh, it's coming. It's coming so soon. I have my youngest on the watch for the forsythias to start blooming. So he's going out every day to check to see, are they starting to bud? Mm-hmm. So spring is definitely coming. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I have to admit that until recently, I knew very little. I didn't really even know that mental health first aid existed. And I'm glad that I learned about that. And because it's intriguing to me, especially in light of what we've walked through in the last year, where a lot of things that may have been bubbling under the surface have bubbled up. And issues that were there before are more pronounced, and we're recognizing that we need to address these, and we can't stick our heads in the sand with these types of issues. So I'm looking forward to learning a lot from the two of you today, and I think our listeners will as well. Before we jump into the specifics of what that looks like, can you tell us mental health is a really charged topic, and there's cultural misconceptions that come with it. What are some of those misconceptions that people may be experiencing?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Heidi. Oh, you want me? I can jump in.
Okay.
You know, I think there are a lot of them, and I think they are also often changing. You know, I've been teaching mental health first aid for 8 years or so, and I feel like I've seen a shift in some of the misconceptions during that time and a little bit of a change and maybe some of the stigma or misunderstanding around mental health. So I think people are becoming more and more accepting and more understanding that mental health is real. It's something that we want to pay attention to. But I think there can still be maybe some varying experiences and opinions and thoughts about it. So, you know, one thing that comes to mind is I think a lot of times, and maybe I'll speak for myself, even as a woman, especially, that I think I sometimes feel like maybe my mental health isn't as bad as something else. So I do a lot of comparison. You know, I might be feeling anxious, but wow, I don't really have a right to complain about it because maybe somebody else has it worse off or someone else is experiencing something more stressful. So I think that some of the misconception can really just be about, like, do I deserve support around my mental health? Is it something that that I really need support with or need help with, or is it something worth talking about? So that's one thing that comes to mind for me.
I can relate to that, and it's easy to compare, and especially as women and mothers, it's easy to push our own needs aside and downplay them, which isn't all that healthy.
No, yeah, it isn't. And I agree 100%. It seems like the myths around mental health have some consistency, and they also change quite a bit with the cultural tides, if you will, and experiences. And so I find that it's helpful for me in my work, and I think for a lot of individuals that I interact with, to understand the difference between some like maybe cultural misconceptions, then misconceptions within their families, and their family of origin and how they dealt with mental health and emotions and relationships and all that's wrapped up in that. And then also our church misconceptions, like our body of Christ misconceptions and our even religious and spirituality misconceptions related to mental health. And understanding that those three realms of misconceptions exist seems to be really helpful because we can hash them out. And I love that you actually brought up like anxiety right off the top, because, you know, each, if you will, diagnosis, even though we experience these things outside of mental health diagnosis, one of my passions is to help people understand that mental health is, it's just something we all have, that it's not, it doesn't just suddenly exist when we're having a challenge, but it does need some attention. And I think anxiety is like one of those big cultural ones that we misunderstand in that, you know, there's depression is another one. Like those are kind of the ones we're willing to grab onto and talk about right now. And what we're willing to grab onto and talk about changes. I think for a long time, autism spectrum and the things in spectrum were faux pas. You didn't talk about them. That's not the right French term for that. But we didn't, that's not something we talked about. And now it is.
Heidi, can you tell us about the common misconceptions that may exist in the church?
Sure. I mean, there's a myriad. I can give a few probably pretty strong examples to help see like maybe where in our individual settings, but also in our current cultural setting that we're getting confused, I think, with the truth of mental health, with the messages that we've heard over time, or maybe some easy answers. I think we like to throw down some easy answers about mental health that don't exist, especially in the church. One that I can think of right off the bat is, you know, a lot of my work is in worry, fear, and anxiety, and the difference between the three scripturally, but then also in the research psychologically and sociologically. And so worry and anxiety and fear are three very interwoven ideas. And in the church, I think we have no concept of the fact that they are also distinct ideas, and that perhaps God is, as the crafter of all things, the creator of even these things for a purpose. And that's obviously like theologically complicated, right? And there's plenty of messages in scripture that say, do not fear or do not be anxious. But that doesn't mean that those things don't have some purpose in our lives. And getting down to what is truth coupled with grace instead of like one or the other, and letting them be a little complicated, we are served really well in that in churches by doing that. I think another one is our concepts around loss and grief, of complicated things like stillbirths and miscarriages and life issues, as well as life issues like suicide and just some of the stigma around that, I think, that we insert into God's word, even though there are like some theological concerns and things going on. And so I found that any mental health topic, because they are also spiritual health topics, because they're so intimate, I think, and they have so often to do with relationships and how we interact together and things like that, then we just need to pull back and be willing to let them be a little complicated and hold truth and grace together when we look at them both scientifically with all this research, but also scripturally.
So a simple platitude is not going to cut it, is what I'm hearing.
No, no, that's for another podcast. Yeah,
mark that one down. I know it is hard for us to let things get messy because it just, especially to let other people see that things can be messy. Mm-hmm. You know, that takes a lot of vulnerability and bravery to go that route. Mm-hmm. Why should we as Christians be aware of and be concerned about mental health issues?
You know, I think about this, and I think about how much of Jesus's mission, how much of the church's mission and ministry has been connected to healing and to caring for people who are sick. And I think when we think about that in terms of physical health, it feels easy, right? Like it's natural that that's something that we would do as a church. And mental health is the same, right? Like just like we would bring a casserole to someone who got COVID or someone who was recovering from cancer, let's do that for someone who's experiencing depression or going through grief or loss, right? I think that we can really bring the physical and mental health into the same playing field.
I agree 100%. And, you know, spirituality at its core is connectedness and across the board. That's what spirituality is for people, whether believers or believers in something else, you know. And so if spirituality is about connectedness, but then also mental health, what's really the number one component we also know from research? Connectedness. So those two things have so much overlap. And I think if we can recognize that, that is going to go a really long way in understanding how God feels about physical health, mental health, our brains, our bodies, minds, and spirits, and this vessel and how it's all working together.
Yeah.
What are some of the common mental health challenges? We talked about a few of them, anxiety, depression, those came up. But what are the challenges that are out there today that perhaps are affecting our youth that we should be aware of when we think about caring for each other?
Yeah, I think you said it really well at the top of the hour, like how all these things were boiling under the surface and then we really see them come out louder is the way I like to put it with COVID. They overflow, right? Like they're no longer containable in the way they were before. And let's be honest, we weren't doing well when they were containable. That's not how we were made by God, is to just contain ourselves. And so I think that is one gift of COVID, is allowing spaces for people to be honest and real and say, I need help. Yeah, I'm really thankful for that. I think that the youth that I see around me, that I see in my therapy office and that I notice online is, I'll name three things. Number one, I see a lot of struggle with what we've seen in past generations and in the church itself with emotional intelligence and the ability to utilize and express emotions. And so this is one place where I think the culture is actually doing better than we are at addressing this issue. So we haven't put a lot of energy or effort into giving youth language for their emotions and allowing them spaces. You know, we still talk a lot about regulation and that has its place, but that's a very small piece of the picture. And so I would say just safe spaces to be emotional. You know, what's one of the criticisms that has been going on for years and jokes about teens is that they're full of drama and emotion. Well, guess what? Like, yeah, we're people. And so maybe there's some stigma in that for them and trying to find themselves in that and appreciate that portion of themselves and have a sense of self in that is really important. And so I would say that's one kind of broad mental health thing that isn't like something you'd hear as a diagnosis, but I see a lot of struggle with in families and in youth. The other thing I would say is there is definitely a rise in suicide rates, and we have to be honest about that. And I think that's one, again, gift that COVID has brought, is that we are starting to be honest about that, that is a problem, not just in rural areas or urban areas or, you know, one state over the other, that there's some universality to the hopelessness that youth are experiencing, and we want to be able to define hope maybe better for them and be able to enter in and find out how they receive hope and where that comes from and that connectedness in that. My third one would be those classic things like I would say anxiety, depression, and neurodiversity in a spectrum. Like all these things happen in a spectrum. Some of them are just need a little of attention, right? To call them by name and say, get some tools. Some of them are overflowing and big, and we want to be able to meet the youth where they're at on that spectrum. If they're having some anxiety, having a little bit of sadness or low mood is what we call it, or I'm struggling with some neurodiverse things, like maybe they don't fit in people's boxes. How can we help them find the tools and resources they need? So I will stop talking now.
Rachel, do you want to build on that? Or,
you know, I don't have much to add, except for I want to highlight one thing that Heidi said. And I think there's some incredible resiliency and strength in youth right now. And I think their willingness to talk more about mental health is huge. And I think we as a church and we as a society just need to be able to be responsive to supporting those conversations. So I'm really impressed. I think that young people are in some ways like kind of leading this conversation about mental health. And I hope that we can continue to, as adults, be prepared to have those conversations and to support them and help them find that hope that Heidi was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Rachel, tell us what mental health first aid is.
Awesome. I'd love to. So mental health first aid, think of like a CPR class or physical health first aid. What that does for physical health, we do for mental health. So it's a training program that's designed to teach people how to recognize the signs and symptoms of mental health concerns, and really most importantly, what to do then, right? So it's a very, very practical program that teaches skills that are really applicable to anyone. So we have an adult mental health first aid class that would be relevant to an adult who's supporting another adult. We have a youth mental health first aid class that's relevant for adults who might work with adolescents. And we've just launched actually a teen mental health first aid program that is for teens who would be supporting each other, because we know a lot of times teens want to talk to their friends about things. And so it's important that we have age-appropriate tools to be able to do that. And so all of the programs really focus on practical skill sets, just to be able to know how to recognize and respond. We are not training people to be amateur counselors or therapists. We can't do that in the short time period that we have. Courses are between about 6 and 8 hours in length. And so we want, though, people to know how to respond and how to connect someone, when to connect someone with the appropriate type of professional help strategy, the appropriate type of self-help strategy. We teach some other really practical skills too, like listening non-judgmentally and how to reassure someone as well. So it's a cool class. There are actually about 2.5 million people around the United States who've taken the training. So it's growing pretty quickly, and it's in about 26 different countries around the world too. So a really cool program. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it sounds like we need to keep it growing.
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes people say 2.5 million. Well, that's a lot of people.
But in the grand scheme.
Yeah. Well, we want it to be as common as like CPR is, right? That it would be something that most folks have had experience or contact with. That's kind of the vision.
What are some of the things that you train people to look for?
Yeah. So we train people to assess for a number of different types of crisis situations. So that's one of the most important things, is that we're just always alert to crisis situations. And we talk about things like suicide. We talk about substance use and maybe overdose even. We talk about how to help someone who's experiencing a panic attack or having a medical emergency that could be related to mental health or not. We talk about things like self-injury. So lots of different types of crisis situations. But the other thing that we know is that mental health is also best addressed in non-crisis situations. So if we can intervene early and prevent a crisis, that's really the ideal situation. So in addition, we train people just to really recognize changes that people might be having. When you're thinking about your family member or your child or your coworker, you know them and you know what their typical behaviors or typical appearance, typical emotions might be like. And so one of the big things that we encourage first aiders to do is just to notice, right? Notice those changes, what's different for that person, and to say something.
Being aware and looking outside of ourselves seems to be important to this.
Yeah. And it's not always complicated. I think sometimes we teach skills that are really basic and actually probably some things that you might already know. Just saying, hey, I've noticed that you've stopped hanging out with your friends lately, or I've noticed that you haven't been as upbeat as you usually are in our team meetings. Are you okay? Right? Like, that's a great way to start. And it's not rocket science. It's not complicated. But but approach people, really have those conversations, because people want to be noticed. People want to feel understood for themselves. And, you know, it may or may not be a mental illness, right? But still having those conversations is healthy for everyone's mental health.
Absolutely. And I think I noticed two what we call secondary gains from mental health first aid, which is like, we didn't actually mean for this to be the thing, but people pick up from it too, is number one, because it reduces the stigma of mental health, because we're opening the conversation for people, then their internal stigma for their own stuff is reduced and they feel like they can reach out to someone else now. There's a new confidence in that, that there isn't something wrong with them or isn't something wrong with their family if they have a family member who experienced mental health first aid. And I think that that's a huge secondary gain that I see happening. Cultures change. You know, I come into Lutheran schools and teach mental health first aid. And it's kind of cool to watch the culture shift a little bit so that there's an openness of conversation and openness of like life together in our mental, emotional, and relational health now. And so that's like one huge secondary gain. And then I would say the other secondary gain that I see is that, like what Rachel just said, is like an awareness of our own abilities and capabilities in being the person that someone needs. That first step to say, hey, I care. And that, again, feeds that whole life together idea that we're actually doing community and I have some capability in me. It doesn't have to be real complicated, but there's a confidence level in that, that to just go forward and use what they already know. Very useful.
Well, and that kind of reminds me of what we were talking about earlier, some of the misconceptions or maybe even fears around mental health. I think that maybe both in society and in the church, we often are afraid of talking to someone about seeing a counselor or talking to someone about seeking help from a medical professional for their mental health. I think we feel like maybe it's too personal or it's intruding or it's judgmental. And one of the things that mental health first aid does is sort of unravel that and help you to build those confidence. I don't have to necessarily tell you what kind of treatment or what kind of help you should get, but I can start those conversations and really, just like I would with physical health, right? I would talk to you if you had a broken arm about what's next, what your doctor is thinking about, what kinds of treatments you're trying. And I can talk to you about your anxiety or your depression or the feelings of hopelessness that you're having in the same way.
What happens if someone that you're talking to on that front doesn't want to open up and realize that it's okay to go get help and shuts, and they've walled themselves off, you know, and you know it. And they probably know it themselves, but they've decided to throw up those barriers and say, yeah, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's so frustrating for us, especially when we're like a family member or friend, it's someone we really care about. I think it can be so frustrating. And often our first inclination is to throw up our hands and say, okay, they just don't want help. And I would ask people to try to find out why. Right? Like think about the why, think about the barriers that that person's experiencing, whether they're feeling like they're going to be judged, whether they're worried about the cost of it, whether they're worried about how other people will see them, right? The why behind why someone doesn't want help is often a really helpful place to start and just to talk about it. It's not our job to convince someone else that they should go get mental health treatment. It's our job just to provide information, to have conversations, to ask questions, to be curious about that. And I think that helps us to be less frustrated about it ourselves too, right? That it's not my job to control someone else or to tell them what to do. And if someone else doesn't want help, if it's not a crisis, I can't make them get help. And I think it takes the weight off of our shoulders and also can open up doors for conversation.
I think that's one of the hugest strengths of mental health first aid is the idea that like non-judgment is one thing Rachel mentioned earlier, that's a skill, that being in a non-judgmental space is maybe what that person needs. And that's something that you offer, and you have done some of the work of mental health first aiding, of providing CPR by being that available individual, the check-in individual, and giving that safe space to someone. And that's a huge component of mental health. And so I really like that the skills that are taught in mental health first aid, whether youth, adult, teen, aren't rocket science. We're, like Rachel said, we're not trying to create mental health professionals, but they are actual skills that you can use when you walk out of that room.
How can these skills help us in our churches? You know, why churches, I imagine, I'm sure there are some that have started going through these programs. Why should they be considering implementing a mental health first aid program?
I think there's so many answers I could give right now. It's so exciting to be in this time where we are talking about mental health a little bit more. The window has opened a little bit that we're willing to have some more conversations about it. And so I think number one, you open the conversation and you reduce stigma by being a part of that, by saying, hey, we notice that mental health is something that people are concerned about, both our families here, our individuals here, our elderly population here, that we know that people in the church that are sitting in worship and that are part of our community here of worship are struggling with this. But we also know that that's something out there that our community is concerned about around us. And it's a huge place of outreach when we become more concerned with what the struggles are of the families and individuals around us instead of just ourselves. So I think it feeds both those pieces for churches, both the inside needs of this faith family, and then also being able to meet our community where they're at. And that's a huge strength of it. Rachel, what would you add before I just keep going on that?
I think I could talk about this all day too, but I think it's there, right? Like mental health challenges are common. And so if we're not having these conversations, if we're not addressing it, it's happening anyway. And so I think people can feel more isolated or more disconnected or more like the church isn't a place where I can safely have these conversations. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be mental health first aid, but I'd encourage folks to have conversations about mental health, to learn, to read, just to create those safe spaces that Heidi's been talking about where people can be themselves and talk about what they're really struggling with.
I think this is one place where the concept of homeostasis is really helpful for churches. So this idea that we are either moving toward growth or we're moving toward death. And if we want to grow our people as whole people with a body, mind, and spirit, then this is a place we need to be. We need to be talking about because it's part of their body, mind, and spirit. And I think in closing down conversations about that or kind of like pushing them under the pew, if you will, if you want an analogy with that, then I think that we are like accidentally not bringing life into that space in their life. And we are pro-life. So let's bring some life into that space of their life.
What are some of the warning signs we should look for?
I think earlier I mentioned briefly, in mental health first aid, we teach people to notice the changes in thinking, in emotion, in appearance, and behavior. So those are kind of the overarching things that we're looking for. And sometimes people will say, well, okay, I've had a change in my thinking or a change in my emotions. Does that mean I have a mental health concern? You know, maybe, maybe not. We also are looking for the level of impact. So is this change, is my change in my behavior, sleeping more or eating less, is that impacting my ability to go to work or school, to carry out my daily activities, the things that I like to do, to engage in those satisfying relationships? So that's kind of the broad way of looking at it. There are lots of different types of signs and symptoms that we could talk about. And many, again, I think are some things that we're familiar with, symptoms of depression or anxiety. I maybe want to highlight too, I think something that's often overlooked is feelings of anger, feelings of irritability. Those can be signs and symptoms of mental health concerns. We see that particularly with men and with teens. They tend to lean towards some of those signs or symptoms. And I think those are often overlooked, right? When we see someone who's irritable or angry, we like back up and give them space, when in fact, we really should be having conversations about that just as we would if someone was crying or if someone was feeling sad, right? Those are emotions too and are things that should be addressed.
It's so true. And mental health first aid does talk about situations where there's some aggression or there's a concern about escalation. And that's really helpful. So you feel prepared to watch for that escalation, if you will, but also demystifies, if you will, the idea that people who have mental health concerns are violent individuals. I think that's really important because, like Rachel's saying, there's like a whole lot of steps before anything is going to break out as far as escalation goes. You know, I work with a lot of play-based therapies, and kids and irritability is a huge piece of the mental health puzzle. And just being able to be like, huh, I noticed that's different for you. That's not your normal way of coming into the world and viewing life and things like that. And so then to understand that violence and mental health, those are often two very different categories, right? And so, yeah, looking for symptoms that are actually symptoms instead of the symptoms that maybe the news broadcast told us were symptoms is going to be helpful for our communities.
What are some things that we can do as prevention activities, you know, in our daily lives that where we're taking steps to actively prevent crises?
This is something I love about the new mental health first aid curriculum that they just came out with during the pandemic, and that we're able to do via Zoom through virtual mental health first aid workshops, or they're blended, like half on Zoom, half on the internet, taking a course by yourself. And Rachel can talk more to that, or we can do this in person, right? And I think there's a huge component of self-care that they identified was maybe missing before a little bit. So mental health first aiders, when they come through the workshop, they're able to identify the prevention elements that they even need in their own lives. And I do think prevention elements can be somewhat universal, like we all need sunshine and we all need to be outside, but we also all need a connection and relationship and these. So some things are universal, but then to have people be able to identify like what I need in my life and what mental health and good mental health indicators I have within my own system, those are really helpful tools for people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll piggyback off of that. So we have a self-care action plan that our first aiders complete. So the people attending the class, because we want to attune to our own mental health as well. And I love it. It addresses spiritual health. It addresses financial, emotional, it addresses environmental things. Like, do I want a plant on my desk? Right. Like even things like that. I think they're the pieces that Heidi was mentioning. Some of that's really individualized, right? What do I need to fill my bucket up or to fill my gas tank, if you will, to make sure that I'm able to provide mental health first aid and that that I get the support that I need when I need it.
Rachel, what does it mean to be a mental health first responder? That sounds really big and intimidating.
Yeah, it kind of does. But we call the people who take the training a mental health first aider, right? So you're a first aider because I think the reality is most often when we are having a challenge, we're not sitting on the doorstep of our therapist's office, right? Like we are at home, we are at school, we are in our community, we're at the grocery store, like we're around people that we care about. And so a first aider is not the professional, and it is not the person who is going to provide treatment or therapy, right? We are the first people to notice. And so it's really about that noticing and then starting the conversation. And I really, one of the things that the research has shown is that by taking the class, people do feel more confident that they have those skills. We also talk about how first aiders don't have to be perfect. We spend a lot of time talking about that. I make mistakes all the time in how I have conversations and approach people. And it just takes a little recognition to be like, you know what? Whoops, my bad. I'm sorry. I made that conversation about me and it should have been about you. Or I'm sorry. I don't think that came out quite the way it was intended to in my mind. I'm really just concerned about your well-being. So talk to me about how you're doing. We have the ability to course correct. So we want people to know that that this is accessible and attainable, And I also like to talk about mental health first aid as being a community movement. Heidi mentioned this earlier that I think we can really shift cultures and schools and churches and communities by having a shared language around mental health. One of the things we talk about in mental health first aid is that you're not obligated to respond, right? So you don't have to respond at every opportunity. If it's a crisis, we would ask you to get somebody else there who can respond. But we have to have some self-awareness too as a first aider about if it's the right time for us to reach out, or maybe there'd be somebody better to respond as well. So I think it can sound intimidating on the front end, but when we remember it's not all on our individual shoulders, this is a community movement. There are lots of people who can have conversations around mental health, and sometimes just noticing, if I can notice something, that's all that is really needed right then.
What are some of the situations that would arise where a mental health first aider would say, it's time to get somebody else to help? It's time to bring in the professionals.
Yeah, there are a lot. So when we think about crisis situations in particular, that's where we start to really clearly define where our role ends as a first aider and where the role of a professional comes in. So we can start the conversation about suicide. We can start a conversation about panic attacks, or we can try to de-escalate a situation. But we also know that we need to make a warm handoff to a crisis line or to a mental health professional who's in the area when those kinds of situations happen. The other thing we also know is that as a first aider, you can always ask for a second opinion. You can call crisis lines yourself and say, hey, do you think I'm doing the right thing? We don't want folks to feel like they're out there on their own. There are lots of situations where we'd say our role ends and the role of a professional begins.
Heidi, where are some of the places that we're seeing mental health first aid training take place within the Lutheran Church?
It's been really exciting to be a part of that happening. Some congregations were doing it locally, and I love the stories that I get to hear from people that say, oh yeah, I trained in mental health first aid a couple years ago, or they picked it up as individuals. Maybe a lot of our youth workers or clergy, commissioned teachers, things like that were like, I need some more information about mental health and how to notice these struggles that like kids in my midst or adults are having. So I went out and got that. And so we have a lot, I think, of people, a surprising amount of people around us in the LCMS that are individually trained in mental health first aid. And that's so awesome. Then we had a few churches that I've noticed that have said, hey, we have hosted a workshop, or we were maybe even just a location for it for somebody in the community. And that's a really cool community interaction and connection, and just being that hospitable place. That's really awesome. And so now I think we're moving into a place where I see a lot of individual districts, as well as congregations, and then the LCMS ministry offices themselves really taking a proactive step forward and saying, we have heard about this program and we want to be a part of bringing mental health first aid to our people and to our communities. And so the youth ministry office, for instance, Rachel and I were able to lead them in one of the Zoom mental health first aid courses, and several gathering planners went through it, and several of the youth ministry office, and also they invited different people from the Office of National Mission. And so just various leadership individuals at the LCMS have been through youth mental health first aid is what we taught for them. And then we also have an upcoming workshop for one of the districts. I've done another Zoom workshop for a different district already. And perhaps most exciting so far is that the National Youth Workers Conference that is happening in Houston this summer, we are having an optional extended day for that conference that will be the Youth Mental Health First Aid Workshop. And they're limited workshops as far as numbers go. And so 30 for the in-person workshop, 20 for the Zoom course, we limit them so that they can practice the skills, so that people can feel confident when they leave that they were able to be part of receiving that information and then also getting feedback. That's a really important part of the process. And so that those workshops are all limited to 30 people. And I've been in many different instances that I'm listing where they fill up and people are asking for more workshops. And so I would say like that any congregation district that's interested, they can always contact me. Or I'm sure that Rachel, especially in Missouri, is an amazing contact for that. We can also help you get to the contact in your state. A lot of states have resources to help with the financial costs, because there is a financial cost to the workshops. There's grants and things available as well. And so I think it's pretty cool to just watch it roll out and to be something that is accessible for different people in all across the U.S.
I like your excitement. It's kind of you get very excited about it. It's very fun to see. It's great when we have passionate people leading the charge on topics like this, because it is so important to get the word out. Mm-hmm. So you
mentioned it too. Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, Liz. I was going to say.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Well, and we do have like a lot of Lutheran Family and Children's Services, and a lot of our RSOs that do mental health work. They are also people often who are trained in these things and can offer them at the local level. And Rachel and I and other mental health facilitators, that's the right word. Rachel and I and other mental health first aid facilitators are in contact with one another so that we can find you the people that you need locally, because we also, one piece of mental health first aid that's important is helping you get the local resources and feeling more comfortable about contacting those helping professionals that are near you and the resources for family concerns, or the resources for primary care physicians and things like that. Any kind of resource that you would need, we want to make sure that you can get that locally.
So we'll be sure to link to the various places. We'll like link to Rachel, your information, and to Heidi, to yours, so that our listeners, if they want to learn more, can go do that and start taking steps towards bringing training to their area. As we start to wrap up, what encouragement do you have for our listeners, either about starting a mental health first training or first aid training or other mental health issues for them to consider?
I would say just do something, right? Take a step, whether that's, you know, Googling some resources in your area, whether that is sending one person to check out a mental health first aid class. There are often many classes happening in the community or now happening on Zoom that an individual could sign up for. I think taking a step, right? That's all we can ask, is to do something. I think that mental health is so important and such a relevant topic right now. And just showing a little bit of care and concern, it goes a really long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say let God's grace be alive and well in mental health. And resources are part of that grace, right? That he brings redemption to every situation in Christ Jesus. He has a restoration planned for our mental, emotional, physical, all of our health concerns long-term, but he's also working it today in little ways. And so just like understanding that God's grace is a part of this big thing that we call mental health. Just lean into that and know that you can. If anything we said is overwhelming or opens, you know, a can of worms for you, just lean back and know that the Savior catches you in that. And like Rachel said, then you can take that first step.
It's such good information. And just it's really not scary when you break it down the way the two of you have. I mean, when you think about, if we can listen and look at our neighbor and be genuine and caring for them and listening to their needs, and then responding as the situation calls for, I mean, that's huge. So the more that we can do that, I think that's good for humanity, period, but definitely will be very helpful for mental health.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Rachel and Heidi. I've appreciated this. This has been a fascinating conversation. And again, for our listeners, we will be sure to link to these resources so that you can go learn more. And by all means, please share this episode with people that you think may benefit from learning more about mental health first aid. Thanks again, ladies and listeners. We'll catch you next time. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Concordia Publishing House podcast. I pray that this time was valuable to your walk with Christ. We'd love to connect with listeners on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Concordia Pub. Visit cph.org for more resources to grow deeper in the gospel.